Hey folks, welcome back. We've got another Greatest Hits episode for you to close down the year. This will be our last episode of 2017, and we thought, why not compile all of our favorite stories, games, and segments into one last batch for you guys. So have a listen, have a great new year, and thanks so much. Madeline, take it away.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. You can fade out on this in the story. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Hey! Now, we always, like, start the podcast with, like, just, like, a breezy question to get into it. Okay. Leanne, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you think about death?
Shit. I would say not that much, so probably like a 4, but I think there's a period of my life when it was like, actually there's a very specific period of my life when it was like at a 10. Should I talk about
that? Yeah, please.
All right. So in college I went to UC Santa Cruz, and I was a little like, I just wasn't committed to the academics. And I was doing a lot of drugs. I did like a lot of weed, and then I got really into acid.
Oh man.
And this is 15 years ago, so I'm far from it. Yeah, so, but yeah, it'll seem a little scary. So at one point I was like falling out academically. I was like on academic probation for 2 semesters, and then finally they're like, academic detention, like you're done.
Whoa.
And I was like, oh, I don't care. I live in Santa Cruz. I am like on the beach. And
truly, yeah. Santa Cruz is built for you not to care about anything
else. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
It's where hippies retire.
Retire. So I was doing so much acid. In 1 week, I did like 7 hits of acid, and I was like, I'm not seeing visuals. I was like, just drop it into my eye.
Is that even a thing? I was convinced
it was a thing, or me and my friends were convinced a thing, but it's not a thing. Like, if you can't see visuals on acid, then you just are not a person that can see visuals.
But there's a logic to it. Let's go directly to the source. Stick it in the eye.
Can you explain, like, so how, I don't know anything about acid.
Cool.
What is 7 times, like dropping acid 7 times in a week? Like, can you analogize
so, like,
that?
Oh, one, shit. One tab of acid is like 11 hours of your hallucinations.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's like 77 hours in
it's
a
like
week of hallucinating.
That's like hallucinating.
To be fair, I think it was pretty like mild. Like, it's like mild, like, you know, green acid or whatever. Real
the
chill.
Kind you stick in your eyes.
Yeah, the one you can stick in your eye. And after a certain point, you reach this, like, if you're tripping for so long, you reach this point where you're just like at this plateau and you just like, are there and you can function, and it's just like kind of like, ooh.
What is
fun.
It? It just feels
okay,
like
so,
fun.
If you do.
Madeline just did the most casual little shoulder bop.
When you take acid, you turn into an ant so dancing at a wedding.
It's not like brunch with your friends.
Acid sounds fun.
So the first time I did acid, it was crazy because I took acid at a party at night, and then we had to drive from San Jose to Santa Cruz over this crazy windy hill, and it was at night, and you're just like, cars are rushing by you. I felt like I was in Tron, like like cars are like, lights are just like zooming by you, and it's this curvy road. So that's like, that was really intense, and you feel really in it. But after doing acid for a long time, you can kind of function, and you're like, oh, you can, you know, when you're tripping out on something. And at that point, I was just like, kind of like, it was just kind of fun.
Yeah.
Things would trip out, but I could kind of like shake out of it and like function just slightly. So that's where I was at. And that was after about a year, maybe like 6 or 7 months of doing acid, just like socially.
Yeah.
But that week, I don't know what it was. That same week, my friend was like, hey, I found this flower. I heard it's like hallucinogenic. We should smoke it. I was like, I don't know what it was. And so,
we found this flower.
She heard this flower was hallucinogenic. She's like, I saw it online, and I saw it in this, like, in front of this house. So she just picked it. And I don't know if that did it. There were so many other factors. But I think it was also like, I was getting kicked out of college and I was about to lose my apartment. And I had like this slight, insane like breakdown, and it was a breakdown where I was just like, I just like cracked, and I guess you could say they were not schizophrenic tendencies, but so psychotic,
like a psychotic episode.
Psychotic episode where I felt like, oh, I'm the center of the universe and I can control everything around me and wow. everything is affected by me and what I think. And then I thought like, and then I started like doing crazy shit, like connecting dots to like, oh, there's all like I'd be on the freeway and like yeah. there's too many champagne cars on the freeway. I'm like something color cars, like there's something yeah, going yeah. on. And then I just got into this like headspace where like there's a conspiracy, someone's trying to kill me. And so I told my like my dad, I was visiting my dad that week. It was insane too, because also my cousin and my little sister were visiting me that week.
Oh, no.
So I was taking care of my cousin and my little sister. And then my boyfriend flew up to visit me. Oh, I feel like it's all coming together right now. There's just so much going on. And I had to drive to my dad's. And I think I just cracked. And then I was like, I told my dad, I was like, I think I need to go home. And I didn't mean Santa Cruz. I meant like my mom's home.
Uh-huh.
So he just like scooped me up and took me home. And,
uh-huh. To Santa Cruz or to your mom's home?
To my Riverside. We literally drove down like,
oh,
like
my
that
gosh.
Day. And I just left my apartment in Santa Cruz. I left everything. And I just, and it was like this, it was probably a year long process of just like coming back to center. And like, I went to therapy like once and I was like, I don't trust this therapist. Her eyes are blue. And it was just this real weird, crazy process where I was like afraid to go to sleep because I thought someone was going to kill me in my sleep.
Gosh.
This is very terrifying. Okay, this is terrifying, right?
It's cool. Terrifying, but like terrifying. Also fascinating and exactly what we love to talk about.
So I was like thinking of like constantly thinking like I was threatened. Like there's, you have this feeling of this constant threat. So it's like paranoia and then like agoraphobia. You're afraid to go outside.
Wow.
My doctor had to prescribe me Valium so I would go to sleep.
Oh my gosh.
And then one day, my mom was really cool. My mom, so we were watching, this is a long story.
It's a great story. Please.
So we're watching A Beautiful Mind. Do you remember that movie?
It's a perfect movie to watch with someone who's like having like some like mental and emotional problems.
Exactly. Well, it kind of was because my mom just like tapped me on the shoulder. She's like, "See, he can deal with this." Like, like, sorry, I'm.
I love.
She tapped me on the shoulder. She's like, "See, you can like do this. You can figure this out." And I was like, and as soon as she said that, like, I kind of have a background with like psychology courses. I was like, "Oh, it's just my brain and chemicals in my brain." So I was like, "Oh, everything that is going on is not real."
Oh.
And so I was able to like, "Oh, I just need to like chill out and like I don't know, like as soon as you're you know, like, oh, these chemicals in my brain are making me paranoid. The pain is making me blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, so, just understanding where it comes from.
Exactly.
How that just shifts everything.
It does shift everything. Yeah. And it like helps me later in life. Like if I deal with stress now, if I deal with anxiety now, I'm just like, oh, these are just processes in my brain. So
that's amazing.
I hope this isn't too heady for anyone.
No, this is not even a little.
Yeah. So it was like this like year long, just like reacclimating myself to like life and stuff. And since then, I was like, I think I could do acid again. I was like, I was so stubborn. I was like, no, I can do this again.
How much later?
It was fucking like a year later.
Oh, no.
And I did mushrooms. And I was like, nope, I can't do this again.
Did it have the same?
Yeah,
what happened?
I just got super paranoid. Yeah. And I just got like in my head. And it was like, people tell me like, oh, people have theories that like my first episode, like just this is so weird and it may not be true. Just like carved new paths in my brain to like, you know, to like, I don't know, to like paranoid, you know, it's like if you experience, you have like a sense memory and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I did shrooms and I did it. I just did shrooms like 3 weeks ago.
Oh, so you're back.
I'm back. Yeah.
What?
I'm
back.
Wait, so how long did you go without doing hallucinogens with just 1 year?
Yeah,
you said?
No, okay. I did it for without 1 year, and then I did it again like twice, and I was like, oh, I can't do this. And then so I stopped for a full like a good like 6 or 7 years.
Yeah,
and then I think I just grew and I got into a good place, and I was like, I like smoked weed socially again. I stopped smoking weed for a long time because that was kind of like a trigger. But I think I just got better, and I'm like I've grown as a person.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of stuff, so yeah, I'm pretty like. Okay, now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to play a game.
Oh my God, I love games.
Oh, great. Okay. So this is a game kind of based on, or not based on, but like inspired by, I feel like our mutual love of junk food and specifically Taco Bell.
Oh my God, I love you guys.
I like love garbage food and I like have a very two-minded relationship with
panda.
It too. Like
Me and you have bonded over some panda.
Yes.
But keep
yes.
going.
Yes. I love garbage.
I want to say one time we had panda and we both were like convincing each other like we feel fine.
Yeah, this is fine.
We feel fine.
This
it was just rice.
Just fine. It's just rice. It's like just some steamed veggies. It's just some like crispy shrimp covered in syrup.
In honey sriracha sauce.
Yeah, I love that honey sriracha sauce.
Yum.
I love it and I love McDonald's the most. McDonald's is my hands down favorite.
You know T-Bell's mine.
I know about your affection for Taco Bell. So what I'm going to do is, and this is, this both of you will play. It's a little bit of a, like a little bit of a variation on the game that we play where we give you a weird ailment and you guess what syndrome it is.
Okay.
I'm going to give you guys a list of ingredients in a Taco Bell item, and I want you to try to guess what that item is. And you're going to have to bear with me because there are many ingredients in all of these.
Oh, no.
So many ingredients. So I'm going to breeze through them and try not to take too long.
Okay.
But take note. So your first one, going to give you some ingredients. I want you to tell me what menu item this is.
This is going to be especially challenging because we all know so many of the menu items are interchangeable.
Yes.
But I'm excited.
Yes. Okay. Beef, water, seasoning, cellulose, chili pepper, maltodextrin, salt, oats, soy lecithin, tomato powder, sugar, onion powder, citric acid, natural flavors including smoke flavor.
Fuck.
Torula yeast, cocoa, disodium.
That's, by the way, MSG.
Oh, really?
It's another word for MSG.
Oh, torula yeast.
Mm-hmm.
Good to know. Disodium. Inosinate and guanylate, dextrose, lactic acid, modified cornstarch, salt, sodium phosphates, milk, cream, cornstarch, lactic acid, more maltodextrin, cellulose gel, potassium sorbate, cellulose gum, locust bean gum, carrageenan, vitamin A,
oh my God.
Fresh tomatoes, ground corn, vegetable oil, corn flour, seasoning, salt, maltodextrin, cornstarch, tomato powder, lactose, whey, skim milk, corn syrup solids, onion powder, sugar, garlic powder, monosodium glutamate,
oh
cheddar
my
cheese,
God.
Dextrose, malic acid, buttermilk, natural and artificial flavor, sodium acetate, sodium caseinate, spices, citric acid, disodium isonate, and guanylate, red 40, blue 1, yellow 5, 6 lake, TBHQ, contains milk.
Oh my God.
Fresh iceberg lettuce, cheddar cheese. And we're almost done. We're basically.
What if you ordered like this at the drive-thru? Like, I get as a political statement.
It's like the next logical. I could see someone passing a law, like similar to the, like you have to print calories. Like, like all menu items must be presented as their ingredients. Cheddar cheese, which just if you wanted to know what is in that at Taco Bell, it's pasteurized milk, salt, enzymes, annatto, anti-caking agent. What is that? What menu item?
And that's a menu item.
Yes.
Yeah, so that has
that's like something like, you could order. That's like it's not as granular as it's like something. It's not just beef. It's like a whole menu. It's something you would order at.
I have a guess.
Do you have it?
Yeah, I guess. But I feel like that's too many components. Like there were like seven different things in there that you gave us ingredients on.
Yes.
Like I think we okay.
So you're objecting to the game.
Well, no, my feeling was that your first like everything that you described at first was the ground beef. And then all of a sudden it started switching into like I thought you were just going to give us like we would tell you the ingredients in like a shell or something.
There are many different questions.
But this is a whole item.
This is a whole item.
Okay, I have a guess.
Okay, what's your guess?
My guess is Doritos Locos Crunchy Taco Supreme.
Why?
You said cream or milk, and I know the beef is a bunch of weird ingredients, and then the amount of MSG that was in it.
Do you have a guess?
I was going to guess the Dorito Loco Taco, too. I didn't necessarily go with the Supreme, but it had, yeah, it definitely had, like, it had beef in it. It had a cheese-based shell. It had cheese in it.
Yes.
It has lettuce.
Yeah.
So you're saying it has, like, sour cream in it, too, and
stuff
like that.
Yeah, I thought I heard cream or something. Yeah.
So maybe, yeah.
Yeah, that's my guess. And we're on a team together, right?
Oh, I
or
guess
not.
So.
Yeah, you. It's sure. like Whatever. A little bit like this. Like okay, it's like say, what's shaken baby syndrome,
yeah.
and that
yeah,
you
we're
guys
on the
can
same
come
yeah,
up, cannot come with it together.
Let's say let's say the Dorito Loco Supreme.
Absolutely.
Okay. Do you have a just to remind you
flavor?
Yeah, do you have a flavor?
Nacho cheese.
Yeah, nacho cheese.
Oh my God. You were so close.
Fuck!
It's a Cool Ranch
Dorito
Locos Taco, and it is the Supreme.
The Supreme, nice, yeah.
Mono, you almost
literally got it exactly.
Nailed it exactly.
Oh my God, Cool Ranch.
Cool Ranch.
Dang it.
There was a chance with the buttermilk that was.
Buttermilk.
Oh, buttermilk.
Buttermilk.
But that's also in the, I know buttermilk is in the,
probably
in the nacho one also.
Probably,
it's just
a
thickening agent. Yeah.
Also, fun fact: cellulose is wood pulp.
Oh,
yeah.
Whoa! So it's like a little bit of like kind of like paper or wood.
Yeah, it's just a calorie-free filler.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
Wood.
Woohoo!
Fun.
New. All right. Enriched wheat flour, water, vegetable shortening, sugar, salt, leavening, molasses, dough conditioner. I'll spare you the chemicals in dough conditioner. Calcium propionate, sorbic acid and or potassium sorbate, contains wheat, chicken, water, seasoning, including modified tapioca starch, salt, spices, natural flavors, carrageenan, disodium isocianate and guanylate, sugar, torulose, citric acid, maltodextrin, garlic powder, dextrose, onion powder, sodium phosphates, pinto beans, soybean oil, seasoning, salt, sugar, spice, beet powder. Natural flavors, sunflower oil, maltodextrin, corn flour, trehalose, modified cornstarch, water, seasoning, including maltodextrin as always, but modified cornstarch, paprika, salt, tomato powder, spices, natural flavors, paprika, onion powder, xanthan gum, malic acid, vitamin C, citric acid, MSG, tomatoes, onion, cilantro, water, vinegar, lemon juice, salt, xanthan gum, fresh tomatoes, fresh iceberg lettuce, fresh onions.
Wow.
What menu item do you think? I was going to give you an easier one, but you nailed that one so hard that I'm really this is really testing your knowledge of the Taco Bell menu.
There's chicken and beans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's chicken.
And I think it's going to be one of the softer items because it had something that.
Dough conditioner.
Yeah, dough conditioner. I feel like it. I don't know the items that way. I want to say gordita. Is gordita the one that has like the thick, soft shell?
Yeah, gordita's a soft one, and then chalupa's the fried version of that soft one.
Okay. So
you know what I mean?
Thick dough is, that's a gordita?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my first guess would be a chicken gordita. I was waiting to hear if there was anything that suggested a crunch, but I didn't.
Here's why I think you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's beans on it.
But there's no beans in the
I don't think
gordita.
There's beans.
Okay. Truly so educative.
So maybe it's a burrito?
I think it's a burrito or a quesarito.
Oh, I don't even know what a quesarito is.
But there wasn't that much cheese, was there? Because quesarito is like the cheese-wrapped burrito. So maybe this is a chicken burrito supreme?
Was there anything in it that suggested sour cream?
No, but I heard tomatoes, onions, and cilantro, so we could have fresco style on our hands. It's tough. It's tough. Let's just try it.
And if you need any reminders, you can always ask. Like if you want to know it, like remember if something's in there.
Yeah.
What were you so chicken?
I think it's either a burrito. I think it's not. I don't think it's a quesarito. I think it's a burrito, a chicken burrito, supreme, or chicken burrito fresco.
I feel like there's tomatoes in the non-supreme chicken.
It's possible. Yeah, man. Yeah. Was there rice, though? I don't know if
there
was
rice. Is that in the burrito?
Is there an ingredient that's rice?
No.
Well,
Chicken and beans. Is there any way it could be like nachos, Topps nachos?
Oh, chicken. I didn't feel like there was tortilla chips in there, though. It feels like there was something
soft.
Yeah,
you're right. Dough conditioner.
Well, so I think maybe it is a burrito.
I'm going to follow your lead on this one.
Why don't we – let's just say the what's that one that they grill? The burrito they grill?
The Mexi Melt?
Yeah. So that has – No. The grilled stuff burritos. So that has rice in it, right? Oh, maybe it's an
enchilada. It could be an enchilada.
Let's call it a chicken enchilada. Let's say that.
We're going to say chicken enchilada. Okay.
And can you – but I feel like you also have – what were you going
to – My alternate is Mexi Melt.
No, okay. Mexi Melt's the one with chili.
Oh, it
oh
is?
My gosh.
Yeah.
What was it?
You said it
I
before.
Said it. Shit.
You said it before.
Was it a quesarito?
It is a fresco burrito supreme.
Oh, wow.
With chicken.
I knew it.
Good work.
It's insane
that
how,
I knew that.
Yeah. You were just like, it was like a beautiful mind style where you were like, oh, I don't know. Like, there's it. There isn't any chicken. All of your conclusions were so correct.
Damn.
That it is a fresco
chicken. I'm fine with being wrong,
burrito.
Especially since I said it. I've sort of said it, you know?
Okay. Last but not least.
Okay, here we go. I hope this is really fun for everyone listening.
It's really fun for me because you know this menu better than I even thought you
if
would.
If nothing else, Gabrus and Betsy can play along.
Oh, you know, we have Gabrus is going to come on. Ooh. And maybe we'll give him another addition. We'll see if he does better or worse. Okay, diced tomatoes, including juice, tomato puree, jalapeno peppers, onions, cilantro, bell pepper, salt, garlic, vinegar, cumin, citric acid, white ground corn with fumaric acid, cellulose gum, sodium propionate, and sorbic acid, canola oil.
White ground corn is the only one that threw me off.
Up until that point, it just sounded like hot sauce.
Is it just chips and salsa?
It definitely sounds like there's no ingredient that – there's no cheese in that, right?
No.
So
– I think it's just, that's my guess, is chips and salsa, white ground corn. Yeah, I think it's chips and salsa or chips and a Taco Bell sauce packet. But chips and salsa feels like the more likely.
Yeah. Do they do a chips and salsa? Or do they just do, I know they do the cheese sauce.
Like chips and pico. Or no, is it chips and salsa or chips and pico de gallo?
I don't know. I've never ordered that there.
White ground corn.
So that's got to be the chips. That's just chips, right?
That's chips, and everything else was like tomatoes.
Yeah, everything else was like it was just a salsa. They were salsa ingredients, but like Taco Bell salsa, like not natural ingredients for salsa.
Right.
But I just don't know if Taco Bell even claims
tomato
to make a salsa.
There was tomato puree.
Yeah, so it's got to be thick, and which is different than the sauces, which are very runny.
Yeah.
Chips and salsa?
We'll say chips and salsa. Pico? Hell yeah. Yeah. Chips and salsa.
Okay, chips and salsa.
You guys, it's chips and salsa.
Yay!
We did it.
Yeah, it's chips, and it's specifically not chips and pico.
Uh-huh.
It's chips and their fire roasted salsa.
Oh, okay, cool.
I was going to give you a sauce packet. That was another. Maybe I'll save it for Gabrus, maybe. Because
nice.
The sauce packet does have a whole different set of ingredients.
Oh, yeah.
So it looks very different than the
for
salsa.
For sure, some sodium benzoate. Yeah. That was so fun for me.
That was great. You did a great job.
Really, you were really excellent at it.
Yeah, you did a very good job.
Thank you so much. I've had a lot of Taco Bell.
Wow. Two summers ago, my sister. Who lives in Dubai, and when she comes to visit, like, she has to take, like, a 15-hour flight to come see us, and she has bad fear of flying for a bunch of other reasons. We took a fear of flying class.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that existed.
It's crazy. It's called, I'm going to blank. I should plug it. It's, like, Captain Ron, maybe, or Captain. Uh-huh. He's, like, it's a fear of flying class that you do out of Burbank. Airport, and it's like facilitated through Burbank, and it's a 2-day course.
Uh-huh.
And I recommend it to anybody. It didn't cure me, but it helped me retrain my brain. And you basically, it's for people who have a like crippling fear of flying. And you spend a day, at this sort of like hangar that's adjacent to, actually it's adjacent to this fake plane that they shoot a lot of like commercials and stuff in.
Oh, that's
and
so funny.
You do a whole day with him where he takes you through just like the logistics of like how flying works
and
like helps you just understand it and understand like the neurology of fear and all
of
this.
Yeah.
And then you go into this flying simulator.
Yeah.
And you like, and it's turbulence.
Yeah.
And then the next day, which is optional, you are supposed to do a flight with your group. You fly to Oakland as a group, and then you literally get off and reboard and fly back.
Oh my God.
But it's like a regular commercial flight, like a Southwest flight.
Yeah.
And so it's all full of scared people?
It's like there was only like 8 people in the class or 10 people. Yeah. And then the rest of the plane is like normal flight. And they like go on the PA and like you're a bunch of freaks. You're like super freaks. They like clump us all together and they're like, hey, it's like Southwest. They're like, hey, everybody, we want to give a big shout out to Captain Ron's Flyers. And it's like truly, and my sister and I were the youngest people by a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
We were the youngest people. And actually, I would say the thing that was amazing and almost helped the most was realizing like comparatively how small our fear was compared to some people. There were people in their like 70s who had missed like the birth of their grandchildren and like their children's weddings and like had truly, truly like their entire lives. And there were people, I would say the starting class on Saturday was maybe like 15 people, maybe like 8-10 did the flying day. And of that, at least 3, I was going to say chicken now. didn't decide to fly. Like at the last minute, one lady sat and like buckled in and was like, nope. And then got off, but was truly crying tears of joy that she had gotten that far.
Oh, yeah.
She had like, just to be on the plane and like sit in it was more than I could imagine. Yeah. And then one lady, or it was like a lady and her husband, and he did it with her. He didn't have fear of flying. They got to Oakland, but they didn't want to fly back. They like rented a car and drove back. But she was really happy that she had done like half of it.
And you can see their faces on Captain Ron's wall of wusses. You were right. That is Captain Ron. It's called Fear of Flying.
Yes.
Did you get the Fearless Flight Kit?
I have the Fearless Flight
What's
Kit.
What's in the Fearless
what
Flight Kit?
It's basically, it's more, the kit is actually just like a downloadable like audio track that you're supposed to listen to
It's not
when
like
you fly.
Valium or something.
No, I wish. Yeah. I have it. I'm giving that out to everybody. Just here's my kit. Yeah, little Xanax.
I definitely want to take Captain Jesse J's.
I know. It's primarily
fun with flying.
Yeah, it's crying on a Tim Kalpakis' shoulder. That's primarily what you do during the flight.
Then I've taken that class. I'm going to take it tomorrow, too.
Having your husband say, maybe more wine. Yeah. That's it.
Maybe more wine.
Husbands say that. That's something that husbands say.
Well, if they want to enjoy a flight in any way, shape, or form, they might do that. I think that was, there might have been more. I think the kid had like paperwork and like info that you could look at, but it was basically like so that on your own you could like, you know, replicate and remember all the things you'd learned. And so, which I listened to it, but it kind of wasn't that helpful for me.
Like,
it
was what kind of stuff is it?
It's kind of like soothing. Like it's funny because it's like, it's just a guy, like a 65-year-old guy. So he doesn't really have the most, like, it's not like a genuinely, it's not like a British woman. Like, it's like Captain Ron wants to remind you, you know, like it's just a guy talking.
It's like getting on like a Disneyland ride where they're like, put your hats in the basket.
And Captain Ron is a Disney movie, isn't it? Wasn't that a pirate-esque?
Well, I kept trying to think if I was conflating him with Forrest Gump. Who's that captain?
Lieutenant Dan. Yeah, yeah.
Not even the same rank.
Yeah. Not even Lieutenant Dan. I don't know if we gave
Captain Ron. Yeah. The only thing they have in common is
it's a rank in a man's name. Yeah.
But did we give him a promotion or a demotion? I don't even know which one's worse.
No, I think it's a demotion to handle lunatics that are scared of flying.
Yeah, it said that he was a pilot for 40 years and a flight, like, I can't remember the term they used, like something basically like flight therapy. Fear
and
of flying.
His whole thing, 27 years. I have his car. Like he has a card he gives you at the end, and his whole thing is like literally you can call him and text him and like anytime. Like
anytime. He's like the Richard Simmons of flying.
Truly, it is. And it's, and by the way, he is like his empathy and like his ability like to is because at the airport it was like people were fritzing and on the plane and stuff, and like his ability to calm people and like he's it like makes me want to cry. He really, really was like it was incredible, and it's not cheap, but it was like one of the most, I wouldn't have done it. My sister signed us up for it. And I was like so happy I did it. And it was also just one of the most like fascinating experiences. Yeah. Like you, we just like connected with people that we would have never crossed paths with otherwise. And really hearing like their sob stories of like how it had impacted their life was unbelievable. Like to just realize like how real it is.
Yeah.
For lots of people. It was, I think that was like an incredibly validating feeling, you know, because you know fear of flying and you know other people, but you're not like sitting on planes like trying to talk to people about it.
Right.
And it was just a nice thing to realize like, oh yeah, we like all share this really real fear.
Yeah.
And
if anything, we've sort of been conditioned to keep it to ourselves when we're, you know, like that thought that like the plane could crash or whatever. Don't say that out loud because now you're inciting a riot essentially.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's
but it's a real thing.
And that's a lot of times what, at least speaking for myself, what can make you, what makes me spiral is like the feeling of like not trying to scare people on a plane is that, you know, I know that when I see a woman who looks like me on a plane, like crying during turbulence or something, that it like activates my fear and makes it a lot scarier. And so it's, you're trying so hard to be cool, you know, during those, and it's very hard. And so it was just nice to be like, hey, we're a bunch of scared freaks.
Yeah.
It was nice.
I think so much of our fear-based life is trying to keep other people from having to experience the same thing. Or if you're a bad person, just the opposite, like making everyone around you feel it too.
Right.
You know, in the class we talk about like, don't be the asshole, the one who like that sort of the asshole kind of move to like make everyone feel your bad feeling too. But in general, I think that's, you know, also in the class, we talk about the choking thing that like everyone is so like
about that.
What is it?
We talked about it on this before that a large percentage of people die of choking because they're too embarrassed to admit that they're choking. We're having these intense feelings and then we kind of keep them to ourselves for fear of like giving them out.
Yeah.
But as a result, you know, sometimes the feeling is real and we should be kind of like sharing it, making everyone sort of aware. But in most instances, it's just we're allowing ourselves to suffer unnecessarily by not allowing others to help us.
Have you experienced a lot of death in your life?
I don't think I have. I have... I'm trying to, in my close circle, no. Yeah. Like I had the first death I remember was my Uncle Bill when I was like 6 or 8. And then my father was a big one. That was like 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've had some aunts that I was close to, but they were like 80s, you know.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't, they were like slow decline. And I've never, knock on wood, I've never had like a call where someone says everyone died in a plane crash, death or car wreck, you know, people who lose a parent in a car wreck or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been in a circle where that's happened.
Yeah.
So I think I have been, you know, I think a normal amount of death has come into my life, but I've never been like next to severe death.
Yeah. I always wonder if that makes you.
Is there severe death or is all death severe? I guess that's. Probably
we know what you mean. But yeah.
I guess.
Sudden and illogical death.
Yeah, tragic death.
Yeah. Tragic death.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all pretty tragic.
Yeah.
The sudden
I would
part,
argue that not all, like when we were talking about my grandmother, you know, a couple, like last month passed away and it was like sad, but not tragic because she was 93 and it was the end of a full life.
And she was ready.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I'm sorry. Go on.
I was, my father's death, because I have very, like, vivid memories. I was coming back from rehearsal in New York for Veep, and I got a call in the airport, and my sisters were crying. And my father battled, like, cancer and had remission, and then he was going down again, and he couldn't eat. And he was quite miserable, and he was sort of going to bed praying, I just want to die. Like, he couldn't drive anymore. He didn't want to be a burden, and he was ready. Yeah. And then he went on this, like, hunger fast. He's like, I'm not going to eat anymore. Yeah. And then my sisters called me crying because they couldn't get my dad to eat. And it's like, you got to come. He's going to die. And I just remember being on the plane home. I gave some of my luggage. I said, I got to go to Chicago, and went to Chicago for like 48 hours or whatever. And I remember on that flight to Chicago, I knew it would be the last time I saw him. I just knew it because he was probably going to go. And I had all these like wonderful, like, this is it. Like, I'm going to see my dad before he dies. And I'm going to have, he's going to impart some tremendous wisdom or some nugget that unlocks everything or something he didn't say to me that he always wanted to say. And cut to us, it couldn't have been more normal. Would you make me a sandwich, Maddie? Yeah. What do you think about the Bears?
Yeah.
Look at this. I got this at the Rite Aid. Like it was all simple and normal. And it wasn't like the sense of death coming had not changed our relationship. Like I said, I loved him and I was really good. I'm proud of like, he would never say I love you. He was that guy that like,
really?
Yeah, I would talk to him on the phone and we were pretty close. He was a good man. And I would say like, all right, Dad, I got to go. And I love you. And he'd always say, thank you.
Wow.
But once it became routine, I liked the thank you more than I love you.
Yeah.
Because it was very signature him. I knew he loved me.
Yeah.
And I felt it, but I could also feel like I'm not going to say it. I can't say it. So it was always like, thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
You know what
that.
I mean?
Yeah.
So it was like, I would have been more disappointed by I love you. So
yeah, because it would have been him sort of almost putting something on instead of,
And I was okay with not hearing it. Like I knew it was there. And then when I literally had to leave the door, he made a joke about my hat and he's like, mom wants her hat back. He was teasing me. I used to rib him. We used to tease each other.
Nice.
And it was kind of perfect. Yeah. And I don't know if he was keeping it light, but I didn't leave that moment. I said, I guess he did say like, you know, but it was things he always said. Yeah. He's like, you know what I think's most important? Is that you kids get along. I always wanted you guys to, you know, take care of your family, love your family. And I was like, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And I have done that, and I'll try to continue to do that. And
yeah, you almost hope that these, I mean, because I recently had a similar, we both actually had recently sort of similar experiences where we went home to sort of say goodbye, but not necessarily in a way where it's so formal, where you're, you know, you're not like hugging them and saying, I love you, goodbye forever kind of thing. And I think what you come to realize, because on the plane, I had a similar sort of experience where I was sort of jotting down these thoughts of things that I wanted to make sure that I said.
Yeah.
And then I got there and I realized like, no, what I really wanted to have was the quintessential experience with this person that I'd had tons of experiences with before, in the same way that when I go home to Detroit, my home in Detroit, I don't go to try the new restaurants that are now populating Detroit. I go to try the ones that I always enjoyed when I lived there. And so you go to have the experience with your dad that you've always had with your dad.
Yeah.
Because if it's a new experience, suddenly I think that makes it more tragic. There's suddenly this new part of your dad that you never got to know. Instead, you find out that your dad was who you thought he was and that he was a good, loving guy who expressed it in his particular way. And that seems like the most beautiful experience that you can have, closing down shop with a person you cared about. Mm. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think it's an unconscious... You want comfort. You want to when you see someone, you know, like my dad. I want to make sure. Do you need anything?
Yeah.
Can I help you in any way? So you're doing service, and then you're also like checking in. Like, do you want to say anything? And then I think you unconsciously want the comfort. Like you want the good things, because we enjoyed bullshitting about the Bears, or we enjoyed telling jokes with each other, or he was rolling calls, like all these friends were calling him and I was teasing him, or we were like, who's this? And he's like, Maddie's here, say hi. And like, it was very normal.
Yeah.
It was like, so I think that is probably an unconscious, like when you go to die or they put you on an iceberg, or they wrap you in fur and put you on an iceberg. It seems like the concept is like, we're going to make you as comfortable as possible.
Yeah.
So maybe in behavior, we were making each other, or I was maybe making him hopefully as comfortable as possible.
Yeah.
Like to press him and say, you got to give me something, old man. That's about me.
Right.
So you're there to comfort them on that next level.
Yeah.
Or before they hit the next level.
I guess that is exactly what it is. I mean, that's what hospice is there to literally make them as comfortable as possible. And we're there to make them as emotionally comfortable.
Those
people
are saints. People who do hospice.
Yeah.
Hospice. It's some of just the best people I've ever encountered.
They really are.
Yeah.
They really are.
Yeah.
My mom has done that through the years, which my mom's an awesome woman. And I could never do that, like get attached to someone knowing it's a short window on this. But they really make such a difference.
Yeah.
They do.
It's amazing. Yeah, they're really angels.
Guys, I'm really excited because we have the long-awaited return of one of the very favorite guests that this podcast has had. I've had several requests for her to come back. We're here with Dr. Laura Malone, but as we call her on the podcast, just Dr. Laura. And she is back to give us more of her incredible knowledge of real medical things and answer some of our questions. Hey, Laura.
Hi. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah. How have you been? It's been months. What have you been doing?
Any medicine?
You know, just talking to people about real medical things as opposed to what I talk.
Okay. Interesting.
Great. Not mincing any words. I love it. I love it.
I guess all the people that we saved from grill brush accidents mean nothing to you. But
Oh, yeah. This is actually, since we talked to you last year, we had a whole summer. You had a whole summer of being a doctor. Did anybody come in having swallowed a grill brush?
Yeah.
No one did show up with that, I'm happy to say.
I'm less happy, but I guess it's a good thing, all things considered.
So, Laura, you're in the middle of a 24-hour shift. Is that correct?
Yeah.
What? So you're helping. What does that even look like?
Well, so my shift is starting a little bit later, but we had an activity during the day that I had to be here for. So I'm off for about an hour or so, a little break. So I figured I'd call in and see what advice or things we could talk about.
Well, I have some questions sort of because you're in the middle of a day when you're going to just work for 24 hours straight. I'm curious about your opinions of about whether you can die from sleep deprivation. Can you die from not? Because Ben is very sleepy today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could I die?
Can you die from not getting enough sleep?
I mean, I've never really seen that happen because I think you end up just sort of passing out eventually. but it's probably not healthy to be depriving yourself of sleep on a regular basis. So I
found an article that said that there was in the 80s, they did an experiment on rats. And after 32 days of not having any sleep, all of the rats were dead. Would that happen to people?
I don't know. I don't know anyone that's actually stayed awake for 32 days straight.
Sure, but you're a doctor, so if I'm your patient and I come in and I'm doing a waking marathon as a protest, I'm never going to go. I'm on a sleep strike. What would you tell me?
I mean, I think eventually you might have problems and die from it. But I think that your body would probably just take over and you would fall asleep at the littlest thing.
Interesting.
And so you wouldn't get to that point, as opposed to the rats that they can continue to force to stay awake, I guess.
How do you force a rat to stay awake?
I don't know. You read the study. What did they do?
It didn't really.
You think they're just like poking it? You think they just like poke the rat? Like, wake up. So they did that too. When you did finally die from sleep deprivation, like what would actually have killed you? Like, would your heart just stop?
Oh, I don't know. I wonder if maybe you would just have like seizures at a certain point from it. But I don't know what you would actually die from. Again, the study probably that Madeline had read probably lends more information to this, because I mean, never actually had a patient that stays awake that long. So,
well, okay, so I have another kind. It's sort of a sleep adjacent question. I was browsing CNN Health, which I like to do sometimes before our calls to see if there's anything I want to ask you about. And I discovered an article about a woman who recently she was sleeping and then she woke up feeling kind of like funny, like there was a pain inside her head. It was like sort of like itchy. And she went to the doctor and she had a live cockroach inside her skull. It had crawled inside her skull. They did a skull X-ray and found a cockroach, and it had crawled up through her nose and it burrowed in there so deep. It was living its life. And it took them a very long time to get it out because they had to like suck it out. Have you ever encountered anything like that? And should I be scared? How scared should I be that that will happen to me?
I've never encountered anything like that. I think that sounds totally gross and disgusting. And so I hope that that never happens to you.
Have you ever had anybody with things stuck in their head?
I mean, not like a bug that crawls inside of their brain. No.
What's the coolest thing you found in someone's head?
why? I mean, CNN Health reports these types of things.
Yes.
This is where you get the information
Sorry,
from.
We meant
it's not
TMZ
on
health.
Like, yeah. crazystories.com or something.
Where do you get your health news?
I mean, I live health news, so I tend not to actually like search things.
But if you want to know, like, what are the interesting trends? How do you beat belly fat? Where do you go?
I mean, I go to like more medical journals if it's something regarding actual patients, but I don't tend to just search the internet for trends. I sort of find that out from practice, what's actually happening.
So you guys are not, when you guys are taking your break, you're not all in the break room chatting about what you read about on CNN Health or HuffPo. I looked at HuffPo Health.
You guys uploading images on the
No, that's probably the last place that we go for any of our medical knowledge. And we really try and not talk about medical things when we're all just sort of sitting in the break room. So.
Really? What do you guys talk about?
Do you have like a comedy podcast?
I mean, some of us do have like real lives with friends and things like that. So,
give me an example. So, okay, I'm going to pretend to be another doctor and we're in the break room. Can you give me an example of what you would talk about? Because in my mind, this is how it would talk about. This is how it would go.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Laura, how are you?
Good. How are you? Am I playing this role or are you just going to play
both sides
of it?
You're just being you. You're just being you and I'm another one of your coworkers. What's the name of one of your coworkers?
Let's just say Kristen.
Okay. Hey, it's me, Kristen. How are you?
Good. How are you, Kristen?
I'm terrible. I have a headache and it started right in the middle of last night and it feels kind of itchy and weird and I don't know what it is.
Are you worried that some sort of cockroach went into your brain?
Yes! How did you know?
I'm pretty sure that's not what happened.
but I tried everything else. I took an Advil. It still hurts.
Yeah. Normally, my other like medical friends wouldn't be looking at CNN Health for their, you know, medical information either. So I think that might be something only you do, Madeline, to prepare for the segment.
I'm Kristen right now.
Okay.
I'm Dr. Kristen.
You're Dr. Kristen. Okay. Yeah, that's not how our conversations really go.
How do they go? Like, what you talk about, like?
Like the Super Bowl.
Oh.
You know.
Like all the, like. The,
some of us
the
did watch the Super Bowl.
Yeah, do you talk about like CTE?
Yeah. You guys would probably talk about
CTE.
Isn't that when everybody's brain breaks?
Yeah, that's the one. That's the concussion thing. They they have broken brain from concussions. You guys should be talking about this when you're discussing the Super Bowl. Otherwise, it's like, you know, there are other people that could discuss the football side of it. You guys got to look at it from a medical perspective. Agreed. That's my form of a question, is I just make a statement and then say, agreed?
Sorry, I'm having a hard time hearing.
Oh, sorry.
I can only really hear Madeline.
Oh.
Sounds exciting. Ben was just saying he thinks that you guys should be, like, when you're talking about the Super Bowl, you should be talking about traumatic brain injuries. And he asked, do you agree?
He asked what?
He asked if you agree.
Oh, if I agree? Yeah, I mean, for things like, you know, traumatic brain injuries, we'll talk about that. But that seems a little more reasonable than cockroaches crawling into your brain.
So you don't think that that's at all a legit fear?
I mean, fear? No, I don't think you have to worry about that happening.
You don't, but why not?
Because, first of all, I mean, I don't even know if that was like a real story or not, or you're just like making it up.
Well, no, I'm not. If you go to, it was a headline yesterday. You can just, but also if you just go to cnn.com/2/8/health/live-cockroach-skull and you'll find the article.
Okay. I'll have to look that up later.
Look it up. I'm really curious what you think. Because there was a picture of the x-ray and everything. There was also a video of them pulling the cockroach out of her head, but I couldn't watch it.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. I don't think I would want to watch that either. It sounds pretty disturbing.
But what if you had to do that? Would you, or would you say too gross?
I mean, I wouldn't be the one doing that. That would be probably an ENT doctor that would have to do that. So,
oh, seems above their pay grade.
Okay. Any advice for avoiding this kind of medical emergency? Like, what would you tell people who just hypothetically were legitimately scared this could happen? How can you prevent it?
Maybe having a exterminator come and then treat your house so that you don't have cockroaches in your house.
What if you don't have cockroaches but are afraid of the rogue cockroach coming in and getting in that in your nose when you sleep?
I mean, maybe then you should just sleep with some of those like nose plug things.
Okay. Okay.
I don't recommend doing that, by the way. But if you're forcing me to say something,
guys, you heard it
here
first.
That's what I will say.
Get an exterminator and just to be safe, plug up your nose while you sleep.
Plug all your holes.
I've heard they can crawl in your ears too, but that wasn't in this particular article.
Okay. I mean, it's probably more likely that they would like crawl in your mouth. But
Laura,
this is probably how it sounds when you guys were talking about football. Okay. I know you can't hear me.
Laura, thank you so much. We're going to have you on. Oh, really quickly, actually, we have our guest with us. Leland, do you have any questions for Dr. Okay. Laura before we let her go save children?
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Laura, can you hear Leland?
Can you hear me?
Just barely.
Okay, cool. How about now?
A little better now.
Okay, I'll be as close as possible. My question is can you prevent your eyes from getting worse by, like say you're nearsighted, if you spend a lot of time looking at faraway things, is there anything that you can do that's in your control to prevent your eyes from naturally, losing their vision or having it get worse?
So, I mean, I think the best things are to, like not read in the dark, try and limit screen time, things like that. But, I've actually heard recently that even the whole thing with carrots and vitamin A, is not proven to actually help improve.
That's interesting.
So I would just try and limit other things that you're doing, that can make your eyes worse. But I don't think looking at things far away will.
That's what, like, and the reason why I asked this, it just came to me because when I was a kid, my dad was like, don't sit too close to the TV. But also when you have a moment to look out at the landscape, let your eyes relax on it. And he had this whole thing of like, you know, so your eyes get used to seeing things close up and far away. So I wanted to see if there was any validity to that.
Well, I mean, you don't want your eyes to be looking. That's what they think about, like watching screens too often, just because your eyes aren't moving a whole lot through it. So yeah, you don't want to like focus on one thing for too long. But so your dad was right with regards to that. But looking at things particularly far away isn't going to change it.
Good.
But you should
know.
Look at things of different depth and give your eyes breaks and things like that.
Okay, so just kind of vary up what I'm looking at it with a variety of distances as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Leland, that was a great question.
Thank you. It just came to me. I didn't even have them prepared. I didn't even know I was going to be getting the opportunity to talk to a real doctor.
I feel like it was not probably as relevant or helpful as whether a cockroach can crawl in your brain, but you know, it was good.
Definitely not as with emotional suspense.
Well, Dr. Laura, thank you so much.
No problem.
Thank you.
Good talking
nice to meet you
guys again.
So you were sick in the hospital. Can you tell exactly what you were sick with?
uh, t-
2013, I had night sweats a lot. Mm-hmm. And I went to the doctor. I was sure something was wrong with me. And I started going, in Canada, you have family doctor. And you go, I went to my family doctor. He's like, I don't know.
What is that? Is that just what just you call like a general practitioner?
Right.
Okay, cool. So you were having night sweats a lot and you went to the hospital. You went to your family doctor.
I was sweating like a motherfucker every night. And I would get up and I would literally like change my shirt and I'd have to change it. Like, and I was just like, these are not normal night sweats. Mm-hmm. And the doctors were just like, I don't know what to do for you. And I started going to the emergency room. And so I'd go there. I went to the emergency room 5 times. And I said, there's something wrong with me. And they looked me over and they kept me for hours. And they would just say, listen, we can't find anything wrong with you. What they found was that I had something called endocarditis, which is an infection in your heart. And usually like very unhealthy people like IV drug users get endocarditis. But normal healthy people don't usually get it. So they did not think to look for it. And so as a result, it went undiagnosed. For probably a year, maybe longer.
So
it just sat there and it grew and it grew and it grew in my heart, in the mitral valve. And eventually pieces of it started breaking off and traveled in my bloodstream like the minecart sequence in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. And they went to my brain and I had a stroke or series of strokes.
Because a piece of infection basically was carted up to your brain.
I actually saw an MRI of my brain from that time. And it looked like rain falling on a big dark lake.
What does that mean?
Just all the damage that was all scattered. Now, I mostly am healthy. Like, you can't see what's wrong with me.
Yeah.
You'll slowly deduce what's wrong with me over the course of the show. But I lose my train of thought sometimes. Mm. I get tired really easily. I repeat myself. Less so now. But I'm like a work in progress. The brain heals. That's the thing that I love about the brain. It's miraculous. They call it neuroplasticity. The brain finds a way to work around the parts that are damaged. But my brain is still figuring itself out. So every time I do something, like when I did the TED Talk, like when I'm here, like I push myself and I take my brain, I push it a little further, I push it a little harder. And then I get something on the far side of that. I heal a little bit more.
What was it? Okay, well, first of all, tell us about this. So you had a series of mini strokes.
Yes.
And then did they culminate in one big event? Or like, what was there like sort of a climax of the strokes?
No, there was I started losing my grip on reality. Like I stopped going to work. I just laid
Which is crazy if you host a TV show.
That's right. And so they were like, where's Scott? And they had to come and they had to get like the super in my building to open the door to my apartment. And they just found me sleeping on the couch. And I stopped feeding my cats, my beloved cats.
Yeah.
I have two cats.
What are their names?
Well, there's a big boy and his name is Chief because he's very insecure. And I have a little tiny, tiny girl. She's literally the size. She's like a black and white, like a tuxedo. And she's so tiny, but she lived on the streets of New York and she had a couple litters of kittens. And her name is Bee, like Bumblebee. So
that's
Chief and
really,
Bee.
And so you weren't feeding Chief
I wasn't
and Bee.
Feeding anybody. I wasn't going to work and I was just fucking falling apart. Like everything, the wheels fell right off my life. And there are some shows where I was still thinking I was well enough to do the show, but I was clearly not all there. Like it's hard. Like, a lot of the show that we did was improvisational. We weren't reading off of teleprompters. And it's just hard to remember, if we're reviewing a movie. And that's what we reviewed movies, video games, technology, like nerd shit, like hardcore. But remembering any details well enough to host a TV show was really a challenge for me.
How aware were you that the wheels were kind of falling off? What was going through your mind when you like couldn't remember things and you were like, was it so gradual that you were just like, maybe I'm just really tired or I'm really,
A lot of it seems surreal. A lot of it's like, I mean, we all know what being drunk is like.
Yeah.
Like a lot of it was like that. It was just like, woo, I wasn't unhappy. I didn't feel sick. I knew I was going to sweat at night like I did every night. And I just was like, I remember walking to work in Vancouver and I remember walking home. But I just remember kind of being happy, but also out of it. Like I just wasn't, my brain wasn't, and every day there was less of my brain functioning, like little bits of it were getting more and more damaged. And so, Yeah.
That's like so scary too, because it's like, I feel like it's the kind of thing like we'll throw around if like sometimes like Ben will leave his keys in the front door, you know, like overnight or whatever. And he'll always be like, I don't know, maybe I had a bunch of little strokes and didn't find it, you know, and it like we throw that out as a casual explanation for every time we like, forget something. But the fact that that happened to you and that kind of that like. You know, that it did manifest itself in like a bunch of things that could be forgetful, and then they just escalated.
Yeah,
to the point.
I'm sure the people I work with just thought I was being a selfish asshole. They're like, wow, he just didn't show up for work today. Somebody call him. We got to talk to him.
That's crazy.
But I was just fucking falling apart.
And
I really, like, they just thankfully found it. It was really because one of the doctors in the emergency room just took a wild guess. They're
so
like,
this is
what
when you came
this?
In for the sweats again?
I just went in again. I'm like, I am fucked up. And I went in and they were like, maybe it's this. And they just decided, they started testing for that. And they found out that that's exactly what was going on. And it had been there for so long. And it was so, I mean, the darkest side of it is I have a friend who's a doctor. Mm-hmm. And she sat in on some of the meetings when they were talking about what they were going to do for me. And, you know, the doctor originally, they came to me and they said, we want to do an operation. We want to cut out the infection in your heart. We're going to do this, blah, blah, blah. And the next day they came back and they said, listen, we've talked some more. We're not going to do that. And I was like, just make up your mind.
Yeah.
And they came back the next day. They're like, okay, we are going to do it. Yeah. And she told me, my friend who's a doctor, she said, Jonesy, they didn't think you'd survive. They didn't think you'd survive the operation. So they were reluctant to do it at all. But then they realized they didn't have any other choice.
Yeah.
So they had to do it.
Yeah.
And they did it. And I mean, that's the thing that makes me kind of fearless now.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, what else is there to be afraid of?
Hi, my name is Julia, and I'm calling to tell you about the time I got stung by like 27 bees. I was working as a camp counselor at, like not even a counselor, honestly, like a team helper, at a camp for kids that were developmentally disabled or like on the autism spectrum. So we'd all gone on a hike and I'm already like, I don't know, not the most outdoorsy person. And one of the kids kicked over a rock and the rock was housing a full-on like colony of bees. And so suddenly it was just like total anarchy. Everyone was screaming and crying and everyone was being stung and I was getting stung and in pain. And like one of the other wiser teen helpers was like, get in the river, just like get everyone down to the river. So I started kind of tossing children into the river, trying to save them from being stung more times. And I had some like weird like single mother strength or something, but I was like 16, so I'm like throwing kids in. I'm trying to save myself. One kid like has sort of like a leg injury, so he can't really walk. I literally like hoisted him up, carried him through the river, and his croc fell off, like his shoe. He had a cute little croc and it went down the river and I was freaking out because I was like, I'm so sorry, we have to leave it behind. There's no time for your croc. So I like continue on, get all the kids packed up in the van. The camp director's like, I'm so sorry, like, we have to leave you and your brother. My brother was also a teen helper. So if you guys can just drive back by yourself, that'd be great. And then, like, spins off and leaves us in the woods, which was terrifying. So I'm, like, stung in the eyeball and, like, well, exaggeration, like, side of my eye. In all these different places, we eventually make it back to the car, and I'm, like, crying and screaming and shaking and just completely covered in bee stings. Thank goodness none of these children were allergic. Anyways, I'm driving us home, and my brother's like, do you want me to drive? And I was like, no, we're going home. I literally drove us home. I didn't drive us back to camp. I'm a bad teen helper. But again, thank goodness I wasn't deathly allergic to bees and survived, and we all made it out. Bye.
I just remember this. I almost died as a kid, like, because we were, I was at this school where all the kids were dumb and I refused to stand in line, and they were playing kick the can. Very stupid. Okay. And
this is Lizette.
This is Lizella, Georgia.
Lizella, yes.
Yeah. So we were playing kick the can, and the can got kicked like kind of far, and I was like, I'll get it. And I run over to get it, and it was, I pick it up and it was covered in ants. And an ant bit me, and my, in the center of my hand, like the palm of my hand, and it like swelled up really bad. And I didn't tell anybody. I was just like, I'm fine. Like, I don't know. I just like went to school and it was like getting bigger and bigger. Yeah. Like I went the whole day like that. Oh. I went home. I remember watching like all that or whatever on Nickelodeon, like with it and like hiding my hand. Like I wouldn't show my nana or my mom. And then they like, I reached for something and they saw it like that night. Like it was like night, like almost bedtime.
Oh my gosh.
And they're like, what happened? And I was like, an ant bit me. And they were like, this looks really bad. We need to go to the hospital. And I was like, I'm fine. I'll be fine. Yeah. I don't need to go. Like, no. So they put me in the car. They take me to the hospital. And the doctors, like, told my mom. At the time, I had no idea. I was just, like, eating ice cream and sitting in the hospital. Like, I didn't know. They were like, we're going to give her this treatment. But if it doesn't work, there's nothing we can do.
What?
Yeah. Because the aunt had some kind of, like, rare infection that they were like, basically... there's one treatment, but if the body doesn't accept it, then like that's it.
What?
Yes.
And how old were you?
I was
like a little kid.
Little kid, like kindergarten. Yeah.
It just sort of makes sense that like at that size, that like once it, it wouldn't take much spreading for it to like just get you.
Yeah.
I thought ants were the safe ones.
Yeah. You think
not
like
this one.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I thought they were the chaperones of the bug community. You know?
Ants seem so clean. Yeah. Ants seem like just like an ant could bite you. No big deal.
Yeah. Exactly. But that's what I mean. Like I picked up a can covered in ants, and the one ant that had this rare random disease bit me. None of the other ones bit me. This one did.
That's nuts.
And yeah, I mean... that's my luck. I was like, well, we got to play it safe.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And that luck could like, that it could fall on either end of the spectrum. Like the special one will always bite you. It could be the one that has the rare infection.
Yeah.
It could be the one that like makes all your dreams come true, but you're going to get the special one every time.
Yeah.
I had a terrible motorcycle accident, which we can get into. Yeah. That's probably the thing. I had a terrible gut feeling, and I still went on that motorcycle, and fuck.
Well, tell us about that. Yeah, when was that?
I'll tell you. It's on November 21st of 2012. It really is like, that's how I celebrate. My birthday's in June, but I celebrate that.
Really? Because it's the day
waiting
you
for November.
Survived? Or
it's the day I changed entirely. It was so
that makes
weird.
I changed
entirely as a person, because, well, I'm still like the same essence. Of course, a core of me is there, but... at the time, I was like in Brooklyn. I was smoking weed every day and just being like, bam! And then going to UCB every day, doing shows until very late at night. New York is easy to leave a place at 4 a.m. and just go home and be like, oh, I'll wake up at noon. And then, so that was my life cycle. And I knew that I was like, I had so much more potential that I was not really exploring. But I was also like very, very young. So
how old were you?
24.
Yeah. How long had you been in New York?
I had been there for 4 years.
Okay.
Or so. it's just I came back and forth like that year. I moved several times, and I still need to like count the months. But and I was in a terrible relationship, and everything was going like kind of. I had signs that I should change my life several times,
and
I just did not listen.
Like
and
what? Like what?
Like, someone's like, do you have a reel? And I'm like, yeah, sure. When do you need it? Tomorrow at 6 a.m. So I would spend like all night editing, but that could have been avoided if I would have listened to myself for 2 months when I needed to edit a reel and I had the material to do it. So it's just like I kept postponing things that I could easily just activate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I had this like lifestyle. So nothing was kind of working. And I knew that I needed a change, and I kept postponing it. And then the motorcycle happened. And then I had to change all of that suddenly and more. Like, it was like 7,000 lessons at once. And I was like, oh, I could have just done it in order when I thought of this. So the fact that that happened, even though it was crazy, and it took me several months to get out of like the first states of mind, which are crazy too. I then saw my life as like a second opportunity, and I was like, oh, I really truly value the fact that I'm alive and the fact that I get to. Like, every time I'm here, right now we're talking about this. Sorry to get so serious. But
No, please.
I'm going to just be
we love it.
Serious about this. We can joke.
No.
No, we get serious a lot.
Yeah, okay, good.
So, like, right now, I start thinking about everything I've done from, like, if I'm down in the dumps and I'm like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing with my life, right?
Yeah.
And then I do this exercise where I think, what have I done since 2012 when I could have died? So then I look at things and I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, this could have ended so much earlier and so much sadder. So, like, I'm actually at a good spot right now. And I always, like, look back to that time as a reminder that, you know, living is great and life is, there's a lot of it. And it's so full of things. So, and it all depends on what you see.
Totally. Yeah.
Like where you put your in brain and intentions.
Yeah.
So like if I focus on the negative, there's always something that I'm going to be able to find. Right.
Yeah.
But if I focus on the positive, there's always something that I'm going to be able to find. But I don't like any of those two extremes because it's too much of one. So that accident made me a new person. So I look back on that time. But before that, I was very careless about, like, if I was drunk in the subway and I would have fallen and then died, I would have been like, eh, it's fine.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, no, I don't fucking want to die. I want to live.
Yeah.
But sometimes I'm like, how am I going to be when I'm old? I don't know if I'm ever, like, I don't see myself past a certain age and that scares me. But that's also, I think that's just me being, like, protective and not being like, when I'm 82, because I learned not to make plans like that.
Yeah. It takes a lot of hubris, I think, to like plan too far into your... We don't really know. I mean, like you said, you were a different person. Yeah. 5 years ago, you were a different person than you are now. 5 years from now, whether there's a motorcycle accident or not, we're going to transform. And to allow ourselves to transform into people that will make decisions in that moment, I think is a healthier way to be. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but Madeline, am I wrong? I have to check in with Madeline a lot during the podcast. I'm not actually supposed to be here.
For example, it happened. Excuse me, I had to burp this coffee that I'm drinking. people couldn't see me, but it was weird. So I was laying down on the floor after the accident, and I'll tell you what happened.
Please.
Okay.
Yes.
We were all. I never celebrated Thanksgiving with family. It always had been like orphan Thanksgiving because I'm from a different country. So I don't have people to do that with. And I've always lived in a city where I don't have families in the state, in the States. So we were all gathering in Texas in San Marcos because my great uncle lives there. He's a teacher. He's a professor at the university. So it was my grandma from Venezuela, my cousin from Venezuela, my mother, me, my other cousin. It's just like a bunch of random parts of my family gather there for a first Hispanic Thanksgiving, I guess.
Yeah.
And then my uncle was like, I just got a motorcycle license. Let me take you out. So him and his son were driving and my cousin, another cousin, and I were in the back.
Mm-hmm. So there were four people on the motorcycle.
Four people, two motorcycles. They were very new.
Yeah.
And the second my uncle said that, I had a like literal in my gut was like, no.
Yeah.
And so I took my mother to the bathroom and I was like, Mom, I have a terrible feeling about this. I do not want to go. And my mother recently talked about this and she still feels terrible, but she was like, I don't feel anything. Your uncle's giving you a treat. Just go. And I said, okay, I'm going to drive in my uncle's motorcycle because my cousin's younger and he's a little like more like extreme sports.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't want to drive. I don't want to ride on here.
Yeah.
Thankfully, we flipped because if my other cousin has two young kids in Venezuela, and if she would have gone through what I went through, it would have been a nightmare. Yeah. Like, I mean, it was a nightmare, but it would have been a disaster. So thankfully, it was me. So we flipped. And then I kind of went away. We drove around. My uncle's really good. Like, he was so responsible, and I felt at ease immediately.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, okay. And then we ate. And at some point, the motorcycle didn't turn on twice. And I suddenly got the gut feeling that's like right in the pit of your stomach, yeah. like bad feeling, mm-hmm. like something bad is happening. That's the same as a panic attack, which started after that. And I,
oh, you started having like, panic attacks after that.
I started, they have gone away, but PTSD is real, guys.
Oh, sure.
So, fucking, it's crazy too. You're mm-hmm. like, oh no, I'm crazy. I'm, sir, stop the car. I'm getting off. And they're like, what? It's a highway. And I'm like, I cannot be in this car anymore. Wow. And that's it. But the, so I get on and then suddenly I get this gut feeling again. And I'm like, oh, no, 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 no. And then I feel like I got signals everywhere. Like, now, of course, looking back, I'm like, signals, they were everywhere. Yeah, but, of course, yeah. at the time I was, you know, all I could feel was like, no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
So I got in the motorcycle and I tapped him to slow down. And he was like, okay, okay. And then suddenly I started feeling so terrible that I had to look up. I was so relaxed the whole time. I was texting in the back.
Yeah.
I had drained my battery, so I had to plug my phone to the motorcycle. So oh, my wow. phone was not in my body.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
No.
There's a thing.
Yeah.
And so I was looking at the moon, and suddenly we just... I my reality just changed. So I'm like riding a motorcycle, and suddenly it's like... Pop, pop. And I hear like, fuck, but in Spanish. And suddenly I'm like hitting the pavement over and over again at high speed. So, and I see the motorcycle pass me by. It lasted so long. I had time to think like, please stop. Like I couldn't stop like spinning and hitting against the floor. And then I stopped finally, like I stopped rolling and I was like, what the fuck just happened? I later found out that a big buck jumped in front of the motorcycle.
Oh.
And my uncle tried to avoid it and he couldn't, and we just both like fell, but we were going at 70, whatever. So we just, and I was in the back and I was relaxed. I was looking up. My uncle tensed his entire body. He broke nearly every bone on the side.
Oh.
I was very relaxed looking at the moon. So I just got projected like, phew.
Yeah.
And I landed very like, I don't know if you've taken dance classes, but basically, or like clown falling classes. That's what
okay.
I took.
Yes. Is that true? You took that?
Yeah. Clown
Can we talk about that after a little bit later?
I can do a banana peel fall very well without hurting myself. But basically, you just, like your body gets really limp and you let it land part by part.
Yeah.
It's like a dancer's fall. And I felt like I was in that state of body relaxation. Mm. It's the only way you can explain that I did not get anything. I mean, I lost a lot of skin in my knees and I got a fracturing this tiny little bone, and I discovered that my mod teammate who was drunk at a rehearsal threw a ball at me and fucking broke my pinky a week before, because the doctors were like, your pinky's broken but from last week, and I was like, Dan, I can't believe my first fracture ever was a mod rehearsal. And then the motorcycle accident where I broke the tiniest little bone in my wrist. But then I got surgery and it was months and months of recovery, and it was like
surgery on your wrist.
Yeah. Yes, and I had so many stitches in my knees, and I couldn't walk for so long. It was like a fucking insane...
You couldn't walk because that's how bad your knees were torn
Well, the doctors were like, walk right away and bend your knee as much as you can, but I returned to New York in end of November. Like, think of it. New York in the cold, commute, you know, by foot. I'm like, broken wrist. I have 60 stitches total in my knees. No one can see them because I'm completely covered, so no one's like being merciful. I'm just like this slow limping person. So it was not easy for a recovery. And also I was drugged as fuck because my everything hurt so much. And I had to tend to my wounds so carefully. And it was just basically I was homebound for at least 4 months.
Not a me sickness story, but I showed up also a science museum, like the sixth grade, our sixth grade class field trip was going to the Natural History Museum in New York City, and I was late for school that day, so I got stuck having to sit next to the teacher, Mrs. Wood. All the other kids are in the back. The only fucking seat left on the bus is next to the teacher. She got sick and threw up on me.
No! Ew!
That's like a one-of-a-kind story.
Throwing up. Like, there's nothing more disgusting than an adult throwing up when you're a kid.
On me, yeah. And so I had to wear, I remember, I had to walk around the whole fucking one day with these like reject clothes that had just been sitting in the bus and belonged to who the fuck knows who. And they're like, well,
bus
driver was like, yeah, I guess I got these clothes you can wear.
It's like, these are from my kids. My kids are ghosts.
And I was like, well, I will never be late again.
Well, how did she read? Do you remember? What kind of throw up was it? Is my first question. Was it like a big throw up?
Exactly. She like was. It was like one of those things where I saw the disaster coming, but couldn't avoid it. Like I saw her get progressively more and more nauseous, and then I remember really specifically. Like I don't remember it landing in my clothes, but I had this backpack that was filled with my like lunch and shit, and I just remember like looking at the strap. And there's just puke just like dripping off the strap of my back.
How old would you guess Mrs. Wood was?
Oh, she was like probably in her early 30s.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so that would be like if
so
I
was like Madeline. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's just like unacceptable, me. Right? Like an adult not knowing the puke's about to come out or like not taking the necessary precautions
totally.
To not.
Like go to the. It was a charter bus. It had a bathroom. Yeah. Like,
oh,
go.
Were you in the window or the aisle?
I don't remember.
If you were in the window, that's even worse. That she turned towards you and vomited.
Yeah. It was like she tried to fire it downward and it just ended up on me
somehow. Do you think, knowing now that she is like the same age as many of our peers, do you think she was sick or do you think she was hungover?
Good question.
Honestly, looking back on it, I've thought that she was maybe pregnant, but I don't know if that's actually true. That's like the way my mind has wrapped around it now, 20 years later.
If Miss Wood, are you out there? If you are, hit us up. Hashtag, are you pregnant?
Puke baby.
That's the episode, folks. We hope you enjoyed it, and we will see you in 2018. Bye for now.
Goodbye.
This has been Definitely Dying. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes, and you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Definitely Dying.
Until next time, stay healthy.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.